Takes a rink wide pass, Stastny into the zone, right wing. Stastny shoots and scores! What a fake from Paul Stastny! Long Karam comes out, Knights are in, Pacioretty on the right, he shoots, he scores! Max Pacioretty rips it from the right circle, and the Knights extend the lead. 3-0 Vegas, with 12 minutes to go in the third.
Another night slowly closes in, and I feel
welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Fox Sports Radio, your home for Vegas Golden Knights hockey. Frank Harnish, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Chris Chapman all in studio.
We're a team.
We are a team. The Vegas Golden Knights are a team. Got a couple games to recap from the weekend. Two, not one, but two pair of tickets to give away for the game tomorrow night against Toronto. And how you doing today, man?
Oh, I'm good. I'm sorry. I was on a little bit of a rabbit hole on the internet, but... I'm not going to get into why, but it just I was curious about something before we came on the air, and I couldn't get my brain to stop thinking about it until I figured it out. Oh, by the way, Cody Eakin scored a goal.
Yes, he did. We will discuss that as well. You know, several players playing very well yesterday. Let's quickly, Saturday's game, they dropped the game to the LA Kings 4-3.
Do you really want to talk about that one?
Well, we have to recap them both. It is part of the job.
It was a loss.
It was a loss. The team was not feeling well. Then they come home for a home game.
Were they
first
sick?
Of four.
So the team wasn't feeling well. Were they sick?
I think they were feeling frustrated and upset by the loss.
Gotcha.
Okay. Whether they were sick or not, I don't know. I wasn't on the plane with them, but they seemed rather healthy last night.
They did.
As they bounced back, faced a Calgary Flames team, who had lost three in a row themselves, getting shut out the night before against Arizona, and Vegas comes up and gets the victory. And we always talk about it. We mentioned it several times on the postgame show last night. You're never going to play a perfect game for what Vegas was looking to achieve and for the way that they wanted things to go. I don't know that too much could have gone better than it did last night for the Vegas Golden Knights. Marc-Andre Fleury gets his 58th career shutout. They get scoring from multiple players, including several points from blue liners. Nate Schmidt gets his first ever four-point game, and Vegas rolls to a comfortable 6-0 lead. However, I will say this. I think the final score is a little bit misleading in the fact that this was a very close game, still almost halfway into the third period.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Vegas certainly played well enough through the first two periods to have more than just a two-goal lead going into the third period. No, I thought top to bottom it was one of Vegas's best games of the year. Now, given their recent struggles over the past 2.5-3 weeks, that's not saying a whole heck of a lot, but it is saying something, especially after that game in LA in which the Golden Knights get themselves back into a game, make one mistake in the third period, don't really generate enough, and then it's the same frustrations all over again. So, I thought it was a really solid game top to bottom for the Golden Knights. Plenty of players had their best outings of the season. We talked about Nick Hague, a little bit more physical in that game last night, and it kind of brought out the best in him. He was really good through the neutral zone. And it was more, to me, about a return to what we have seen out of Vegas for the first 2.5 years of its existence, really the first two-ish years of its existence. And that was the ability to get up the ice quickly, crisply, in transition, and not making hope plays. We've seen when Vegas gets into trouble, they're not managing the puck. They're hoping for something to happen rather than taking that extra second to make sure that there's a player in the area where they're going to drop that puck. So, top to bottom, I thought it was a well-earned 6-0 win.
Yeah, I thought it was well-earned, but like I say, I mean, it was 1-0 after one period, 2-0 after two, and it easily could have been 2-1 in the third period there, which would have made it a lot closer, but Marc-Andre Fleury, I thought, played absolutely sensational. Generally, when a goalie gets a shutout, he does, but I thought Fleury played out of his mind. I thought that he was the best player on the ice out there. I think a lot of the other Golden Knights echoed those same sentiments, and Fleury gets the shutout, and I guess you still have a little bit of time if you were at the game last night to get your donuts, so... I think it's a 24-hour window or something. So,
go get your donuts if you were at the game.
All right, so in the game last night, you mentioned Cody Eakin.
He scored a goal. How many goals do you think he could have had last night, legitimately, outside of just his one?
Well, I can probably think of at least one or two other opportunities that he had.
Yeah, I think there was a play in the second period where he had a pretty good look, but Talbot was able to get over and I think blocked the shot. But
yep.
I think it was a feed from Stone, maybe set him up. And
Stone set him up at least once. Marchessault set him up on the doorstep at least once. I mean, Cody Eakin quite literally could have had a hat trick last night. He could have had that many goals.
Yeah, he could have. I mean, there's definitely chances. But the one that he did get was nice. I mean, we've seen other guys get that pass and shoot it into the goalie's blocker. And he did put it up a top shelf to get it over there. After the game, Coach Gerard Gallant spoke about Cody Eakin and getting his first goal of the season.
He was a lot like our team. We were pressing and we were, you know, getting frustrated a little bit. So for Cody, it's awesome. I thought he played his best game of the year tonight. He was really good and solid and strong. But with Cody's game, it comes from playing good, solid defense first and working hard and being on the right side of the puck. And he got rewarded because he played a good game.
Now, I want to mention something to you. Because I don't think you heard when Gary Lawless mentioned this last night, speaking about Cody Eakin. Gary mentioned the fact that look for Cody Eakin to start breaking out now. Because people have been giving him some gruff on social media in different areas. And what they don't realize is Cody Eakin is the type of player that plays if he's only 60%. If they give him the green light to go out there, he's going to play. So Gary's assessment was that Cody is now healthier again and starting to wind into form. The reason that he hasn't been putting up numbers is because he's been playing, although he has not been anywhere near 100%. He's been playing through injuries. Most players do play through injuries. But he's basically saying that Cody, that's why he wins the respect of his teammates and the other coaching staff. And that Gary basically, and this was before he scored the goal last night, came out and said that he thinks, watch for Cody Eakin now to break out and start scoring goals and be more like the player that had 22 goals last season.
So, Cody Eakin was hurt?
That's what Gary alluded to.
Wouldn't you think that if that's the case, you would give somebody that isn't hurt an opportunity to play in a role that maybe you can get a little bit more out of than trying to gut it out?
Like, possibly. I'm not trying to retune. I just wanted to throw that out there because when he said it, I thought it was interesting. I mean, maybe the coaching staff, because they believe in him and what he brings to the ice, that he's still going to give you 100% of everything he has out there. But that's a statement that Gary had made that I thought was interesting in last night's game.
I mean, yeah, I guess if he's fully healthy right now, then you're hoping that things kind of turn for Cody Eakin. I would argue that it's probably the fact that he's playing with Mark Stone and Jonathan Marchessault. Like, if there's going to be a turn of fortune, it's probably because he's playing with two guys that are incredibly good offensively. You know, but I mean, that said, like, you know, if he's medically cleared to play, he's got to be close to 100%. And I can't imagine that Cody Eakin would be medically cleared to play if he was something other than close to 100%. So I have a hard time, and without knowing, you know, exactly what Gary said or what he was alluding to, I find that to be a little bit weird. If you've got a guy that is being hampered by something, it doesn't necessarily make any sense to me to put them into a situation where they're playing games in October and November when they could easily get themselves re-injured, as opposed to just rehabbing and getting them ready to go for when they're actually 100% healthy.
Yeah, and again, I don't know all the parameters either. I'm going to keep an eye on Cody. Well, we're going to keep an eye on all the players anyhow. But to see from now and see if, you know, if there is a little bit more pep in his step, if maybe getting that first goal, maybe there were other reasons. But like you said, if they put him in the lineup, they're figuring he's gonna go. And I don't think there's too many players out there, unless there's something serious wrong with them, that wouldn't hit the ice if they had the opportunity. So Cody Eakin gets his first goal. William Karlsson catches fire. He gets the first and the last goal of the game. Anything else stick out to you necessarily offensively? Because, again, it was 2-0 into the third period, kind of a ways into the third period, and then all of a sudden at the end it just exploded and just got completely out of hand.
Marchessault, Eakin, and Stone were very noticeable offensively. I thought they had a number of really good chances to get those goals in the first and the second period. It's just Cam Talbot played really, really well through the first 2.5 periods and then couldn't be Superman anymore. He just couldn't. He faced too many really good grade A opportunities. And then, you know, I thought that William Karlsson was great offensively and defensively. William Karlsson, I think, had one of his best games, if not the best game of the year, against the Calgary Flames. He was all over the place, leading transition. Nate Schmidt showed up offensively, but again was incredibly good defensively. The play that he made on Max Pacioretty's goal, where he's in the corner, he knows that he's got a guy coming on, and he takes that hit to make the play. He takes that hit to chip the puck up the boards, and then all of a sudden it's a two-on-one break the other way. Those are the types of plays that you have to be willing to make. Nate's never been afraid to do that, but it just helped him cap a four-assist game and a four-point night for Nate Schmidt. So you got guys up and down the lineup. I thought Jonathan Marchessault, again, was really good, not just as a line with Stone and Eakin, but just individually. I thought Marchessault was really good. I thought Marchessault was good against L.A. too. You know, he had one of those shifts where he scores that goal and he goes out there and you can almost see that he's willing it to happen, right? Like, he goes out there, he decides he's going to score a goal, or his line is going to score a goal, and then it happens. So, I thought there were a lot of really positive things. Cody Glass did some good things. Paul Stastny did some good things.
Yeah, I thought that line played really well, the third line, because even the goal that Stastny had where he basically skated around the reigning Norris Trophy winner to score that goal. I mean, that was a great individual effort, and of course,
yeah,
got the assist, I believe, from Schmidt on that goal as well. But
and there was a play from Alex Tuch early on in the game. I think it was the first period, and it was after we had seen Mark Stone do something very similar. So there was a faceoff in the Golden Knights zone where Mark Stone jumps from his spot off the faceoff, lifts Matthew Tkachuk's stick, and then is off to the races, right? He's you know, doesn't score, but he gets a really good chance on it, and it's all because of his defensive ability and his stick. Well, there was a play later on in that period where the puck comes down, Alex Tuch kind of bobbles it. It looks like, I believe it was Rasmus Anderson was going to get to that puck, and then Alex Tuch just lifts his stick and gets a grade-A scoring chance right from the slot. If you don't think Alex Tuch is learning things from watching Mark Stone, go back and rewatch the first period, because Alex Tuck's stick has been better. He has been a little bit more, I would say, sure of himself when it comes to making defensive plays, when it comes to forechecking, when it comes to backchecking. I thought top to bottom, it was a really good performance by almost everybody that wore, it was a good performance by everybody that was on the ice for the Golden Knights. Every single player.
I do want to look at one other player specifically, and we spoke about him in the postgame show a little bit, and our check of the game brought to us by Inspirity.com. Inspirity.com for everything, for all your HR needs and so much more. Check out Inspirity.com. And Ryan Reeves, and you spoke about a little bit, Ryan Reeves was throwing his body all over the place. He was taking command out there, and it was a physical game. 45 hits for Calgary, 39 for the Vegas Golden Knights. But Reeves wasn't just going about there helter-skelter just to hit anything in sight in a Calgary sweater. He also played an intelligent game in a lot of parts, and there was one play I know that you mentioned last night that really stood out to you.
Yeah, it was a play where Ryan Reeves was kind of the last man back. It was a back check in which both defensemen get caught on a turnover in the neutral zone. All of a sudden, Michael Backlund is streaking down the wing. Ryan Reeves, the only guy back, he takes away the middle of the ice and then strips Backlund of the puck and then kind of bodies him into the corner. That was the defensive play of Ryan Reeves' career, and it came at the perfect moment because you've still got a game at that point. Something happens there. You kind of start to panic, and I thought that was a very composed, incredibly smart play by Ryan Reeves.
And it seems to me that we're seeing Carrier do a lot more of that this year, too, when he's going back and he's not just hitting people just to hit them, but they're using a purpose and taking the puck away. And sometimes I wondered myself, is that partly, like you mentioned when you're playing with other players, seeing Mark Stone on a daily basis and how good he is at taking the puck away and using intelligence in that? I mean, everybody loves the big hit, but it seems like now they're hits with a purpose and trying to get something else out of there and maybe get that turnover. And they certainly won the turnover battle last night, big time in that particular game. Vegas Golden Knights with 9 takeaways as opposed to 3 for Calgary. Only 1 giveaway. Calgary had 7 of them. When they win the turnover battle, more often than not, they win the game.
Well, I thought Carrier and Reeves and Nosek, I thought they were pretty good as a line. Reeves is I think oftentimes when people start talking about Ryan Reeves, they get a little bit divisive in terms of, what is Reeves' main job? Well, his main job is to go out there, be an energy, be a spark plug, and get some hits, right? Like, you don't necessarily count on him to score goals. You don't necessarily count on him to make incredible defensive plays. You just count on him to do one thing. Same thing with Will Carey. You count on them to put the pucks in the offensive zone, hit, forecheck, and if you get an opportunity, you get a chance, great. If it goes in, even better. But you often wonder and you worry about their play in the defensive zone. Last night, I thought Ryan Reeves was incredible defensively. He was in the right place at the right time. He was on the right side of the puck. How much of that has to do with, you know, coaching? A lot of it. 100% a lot of it. Like, you talk to Gerard Gallant, you talk about the emphasis placed on being 200-foot players. Defense is more about energy and skating ability and effort anyway. So there's really no excuse to play poorly defensively. And I thought last night was Reeves' best game defensively. The Carrier was really good. He was more active, I think, in the offensive zone in terms of getting in on the forecheck and taking the body. The play where he, you know, kind of snuffs out Milan Lucic. Lucic gets up. He's not happy about it. He and Reeves get together, and there's, you know, a couple of penalties there. I just thought from every facet of the game, from physicality, from forechecking, backchecking, neutral zone speed, the Golden Knights were just better everywhere on the ice than the Calgary Flames. And it was very reminiscent of games 1 and 2 of the season for the Golden Knights against the San Jose Sharks, where the Golden Knights in every single facet of the game were just better.
Reeves also had a monster hit on Killington,
yep,
from Calgary. I mean, he kind of stalked him a little bit, and I thought the timing was good, but I mean, it was a big hit.
It was one of those hits where it makes you question Calgary's sanity in terms of the James Neal for Milan Lucic trade.
Yeah.
And I'll explain it this way, right? You have spark plugs on the Calgary Flames in Sean Monahan, Sam Bennett, who didn't play last night, and Matthew Tkachuk. Those guys live to get under the skin of other players. And then you've got smaller, more compact players like Johnny Gaudreau, who isn't going to hurt anybody. He's not looking to make a big hit. He's not looking to goon it up. But you do worry about his safety on the ice in terms of players taking liberties. So when James Neal didn't work out, the narrative out of Calgary is quite simply, well, you bring in Milan Lucic for that sandpaper because you've got guys that want to feel a little bit bigger and feel a little bit safer on the ice, knowing that Milan Lucic has their back. Well, when Ryan Reeves made that hit, you want to know who was on the ice? Milan Lucic. You want to know who looked at that hit happen? Milan Lucic. You want to know who didn't respond in any way, shape, or form to that hit? Milan Lucic.
It basically happened right in front of him, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. And Reeves and Lucic lined up after a TV timeout on a faceoff, and they were talking, and they were talking, and they were talking, and nothing happened. If I'm the Calgary Flames, I sit down Milan Lucic and I say, we brought you in for one reason. And the fact that you just allowed that to happen is ridiculous because you're not helping us. You're not scoring goals. You're not putting, you know, you're not producing anything. What are you doing?
Well, he has no problem throwing sucker punches behind the net.
I mean, there's different degrees to which Milan Lucic does or doesn't do his job.
Yeah, well, that's he's not certainly not going to throw a sucker punch at Ryan Reeves.
Sometimes you got to go with your strengths, and maybe sucker punching is his strength. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. I want to read you something that Matthew Tkachuk said, but before we get to that, I want to get to one other thing. When we're talking about the keys to the game, you mention it all the time, and we're in complete agreement about this, transition offense and getting the puck and moving it smoothly in that. Coach Gerard Gallant also spoke about that after last night's 6-0 win.
That's been missing a little bit in some parts of this season, but tonight it was excellent. We really moved the puck well. I mean, when Nabber makes a pass like he did in that, I think it was the fifth goal, Carlson's goal, might have been the sixth, I'm not sure, but it was a great pass up the middle and, sort of a look away and put it on his tape, so great play, and that's what we were all about. We were all about playing fast and speed and transition, and I thought it was real good.
Was that the best you've seen them in the transition offense in a while?
It's the fastest they've played in a long time, for sure. And it's not just, like, that play that Gallant's talking about was the sixth goal of the game where, you know, Carlson's breaking in, McNabb hits him with a great pass, right on the tape, he's able to go in. I'm talking about the William Carlson goal, too, where Max Pacioretty gets on his horse to turn that into a 2-on-1. I'm also talking about the Max Pacioretty goal, where William Carlson, all the way from his defensive zone, gets on his horse to make that a 2-on-1. If those two players on those two instances don't do what they did, it's a lot easier save for Cam Talbot. It's a lot easier play for the Calgary defenseman. And you probably don't score in those situations. So it's recognizing when to turn on that individual speed. It's recognizing when you've got a team kind of on their heels. But it's also about support 200 feet. And I thought the forwards did a really good job of presenting themselves as options for quick breakouts for the defensemen. And then there were no hope plays to the neutral zone. And that's the biggest thing. The Golden Knights were sure of where they were moving the puck when they were coming through the neutral zone. And when you are doing that, you can execute really, really well. You can move the puck quickly. If you don't do that, if you're just kind of hoping for something to happen, that's when you run into trouble. That's when you're not really cohesive through the neutral zone, and that's when teams can shut you down.
Vegas Golden Knights get the 6-0 win over the Calgary Flames, break their losing streak. Three more games this week, Toronto, San Jose, and Edmonton all coming to T-Mobile Arena. The Flames now, by virtue of that loss, Vegas jumps over them in the Pacific standings again. We're only a quarter of the way through the season, but people are looking at that sort of stuff. And both teams were struggling coming in. Is this the game that breaks Vegas out? We'll find out. There's more games to come. Matthew Tkachuk, talking about the Flames after the game last night, said this: "It's disgusting. It's bad. It's bad right now. We need to change this around. Something's got to change here. We've got to get back to the old us and get out of this little funk we have here, because this is not fun. It's getting pretty old. We just can't get this lead. We trail, we press, and they put a six spot on us when it's a pretty tight game until the third period. We just kind of let them run away with it and leave our goalie out to dry countless times. It's getting old." Sounds like right now Calgary is in a bit of a funk and pretty frustrated in their locker room.
Is he wrong?
No, I think he's completely right. But and that's one of the things that I love about hockey players, is that a lot of times, I know the sports, you don't always get this. When they have something on their mind, they say it. I mean, in one of the games recently, one of the losses, when Chris asked Nate Schmidt if the team was good right now, he said no, they weren't playing well. You know, Riley Smith talked about that they still believe in themselves and that they're good, but they got to turn things around. They don't necessarily shy away from it and try to make excuses or something. Just, you know, I think Tkachuk is absolutely right. And Tkachuk is kind of a strange player, too, because he's the kind of guy that if he's on your team, you probably love him, but if he's not, you can't stand him. He's a skilled player. But, man, some of the stuff he does in the ice really gets under people's skins. But last night, I thought Marc-Andre Fleury got in his head more than Tkachuk got in the Golden Knights.
So I guess the question is, what's wrong with the Calgary Flames?
Well, right now, I mean, it seems like they are certainly not scoring right now. Shut out in back-to-back games.
Did you notice Johnny Gaudreau?
I noticed Johnny Gaudreau when he was out there, just because I look for Johnny Gaudreau. If I wasn't looking for him, I wouldn't have noticed him.
Yes, he got nothing from Gaudreau. The Sam Bennett injury hurt them. He didn't play last night. He's one of those players that plays similarly to Matthew Tkachuk. He's got some skill. He goes to the front of the net. He makes things difficult. I don't think Giordano had a particularly strong game, especially when he's on the ice for that that play against Paul Stastny, where he just doesn't read it particularly well. I thought Cam Talbot was really good. Outside of that, there really wasn't much to write home about the Calgary Flames. And I guess the question is Bill Peters a good hockey coach? Because, and let me kind of put that through this lens, right? The Carolina Hurricanes 2 years ago were a team that everyone thought was going to take the next step under Bill Peters, and they end up missing the playoffs. Then Bill Peters goes to Calgary. Calgary has their best record in a long time, their best team in the Western Conference, second best team in the NHL, and gets swept in the first round. Meanwhile, Rod Brind'Amour, with essentially the same roster in Carolina, as a first-year coach, manages to take that team to the Eastern Conference Final. So now you see the Calgary Flames starting to splinter and fall apart. Bill Peters hasn't done very much of anything to jumpstart the guys. He hasn't really changed up too much. He hasn't gone away from status quo. My question is quite simply, is Bill Peters a good hockey coach?
I don't know enough to answer that right now, but I think the results will be interesting, and he's certainly going to be watched from this point on. Do you think he might be on the hot seat? Or is it way too early? I mean, they're still a 500 team, essentially.
They should be better than that.
Right.
Could it be that maybe they're missing something that you mentioned earlier? Right? Like, they didn't make the playoffs 2 years ago. They get James Neal last year. All of a sudden, they're a really good team. James Neal has a track record of elevating teams, right? He helped the Golden Knights year one. He helped the Nashville Predators. You trade away.
Are you trying to say that maybe playing James Neal in a top six role might lead to him scoring goals instead of burying him on the fourth line like Phil Peters did last year?
That's probably what I'm getting at.
I think that you have a classic case of, I know what I'm doing. I like certain players. I'm going to put certain guys in a role to succeed. I'm going to bury other guys in spite of the fact that maybe, just maybe, if I make some personnel changes, it'll help our team. I don't think Bill Peters is a very good hockey coach.
I guess we'll find out a little bit later on or more during the season, but right now they are certainly struggling, and it seems like maybe he's lost that locker room a little bit, and the players are questioning themselves right now. Is Mike Babcock a good coach?
This is going to be fun.
We're going to discuss that next. And, of course, we'll also look at some of the other Toronto also struggling. And people are saying that Babcock's on the hot seat. But before we step aside, we need to give away our first pair of tickets for that game.
You know what? We're talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. So we're going to go with a great Toronto player. One of the best.
Oh, no.
Ever. To lace him up for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Did he also lace him up for the New York Islanders?
No.
Okay.
No. Tavares isn't there yet. Come on. This one's actually funny because people are going to get mad at me when I say it because he was only there for a drink of water. But number 88, Eric Lindros. Oh. Toronto Maple Leaf great.
All right. There you have it. Number 88. 702-876-1340, 702-876-1340. Back with lots more Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey.
With help from Stone, got the puck to center. Deacon forcing it loose from Monahan. Stone is in. Deacon shoots. He scores! Marchessault to Deacon. Cody's first of the year, and it's 4-0 Golden Knights. Stastny digs in right side. Now Pacioretty heels across. Stone scores! Mark Stone, it's a power play goal. 5-0 Knights with under 5 minutes to play. Oh, here's Carlson splitting the D. Backhand shot, he scored! Carlson puts the backhander on net. He got through two defenders and softly tapped it towards the cage. It went in off the left post and into the goal. 6-0 Knights.
Welcome back. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Your home for Golden Knights hockey. Frank Harness, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Chris Chapman. Congratulations to Don. Don's going to be checking out the Toronto Maple Leafs tomorrow night over at T-Mobile Arena.
It's the Mike Babcock farewell tour.
So the Maple Leafs are the team in town tomorrow. And okay.
They are. Yep.
Yes.
They are.
Mike Babcock, we're going to hear from him in just a second. I did want to throw this, as if things aren't bad enough for Toronto right now, they just found out that Trevor Moore will be missing a couple more games. He's been placed on the IR. What does that mean to this team? I mean, obviously that is not their most significant thing.
It's not more important than missing Mitch Marner for the next 4 weeks, at least, or Alexander Kerfoot being out for a while. Let's kind of go back. And because I wanted this segment to be Toronto fans want Mike Babcock gone. I mean, there have been multiple stories over the last couple of days that this six-game road trip for the Toronto Maple Leafs may very well be the end of Mike Babcock, depending on how Toronto fares. It didn't start great in Pittsburgh.
Right.
As their new backup goaltender, Kazimir Kaskisuo, ends up giving up 6 goals. The team completely no-shows in front of him, with the exception of maybe John Tavares. And they just look completely outclassed. And it's not like you can point to the injuries. We talked about Mitch Marner. He's out. We talked about Kerfoot. He's out. Trevor Moore is out. It's not that you could even point to injuries as an excuse to losing that game against the Penguins because, oh, by the way, Patrick Hornquist is out for Pittsburgh. Sidney Crosby out for Pittsburgh. And, you know, they lost on depth, right? So all that being said, I wonder, as much as I like Kyle Dubas for being one of those forward-thinking type of guys, a young guy trying to succeed, trying to do it his way, right? As much as I like Kyle Dubas, my question is it Mike Babcock destroying a great team in Toronto? Or were some of the moves made by Kyle Dubas inhibiting how good this team could have been, and if maybe Lou Lamoriello was still around, the Toronto Maple Leafs would have been a better team to start this year. So let's talk about Nazem Kadri. Right? Nazem Kadri was traded to the Colorado Avalanche. In return, Toronto ends up getting Tyson Barrie, a right shot defenseman who puts up a ton of points on, let's just kind of call it what it is, over the last 5 years, a pretty bad offensively Colorado Avalanche team. Oh, and the throw-in was Alexander Kerfoot. Well, here's the problem. Barrie has been awful. He's been bad. Like, really, really bad. Now, you could say Kyle Dubas swung and he missed on Tyson Barrie, but at least Alexander Kerfoot's been good. Well, Alexander Kerfoot, as good as he's been, is still not as good a center as Nazem Kadri. So because Barrie hasn't been good, you don't end up winning this trade. You're not a better team by taking a center that's good and replacing him with an okay center and a defenseman you thought was going to bring your defense up a notch, but it hasn't worked out. Tyson Barrie has 6 points, no goals, 6 assists. He was supposed to be a power play specialist. It hasn't worked out. Jake Muzzin, of all people, has more goals, more points than Tyson Barrie. So failure number one. Failure number two, Cody Ceci is not an NHL player. He was a cap move for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They are forcing Cody Ceci and Morgan Rielly together as a pairing. It has not worked out for Rielly, who last year had one of the best years of his career and was in the Norris conversation. So you're effectively destroying your best defenseman by pairing him up with an AHL player at best in Cody Ceci. And we saw it in the game against the Golden Knights. Cody Ceci gift-wrapped that goal for Max Pacioretty. And then you've got Jake Muzzin, perfectly acceptable defender. Tyson Barrie, supposed to be the puck-moving guy, and the guy that's going to put up the points, is just not there. Now, my argument on Babcock is, recognize it. Make a change. There's no reason why, in order to jumpstart Tyson Barrie, you couldn't play him with Morgan Rielly. There's no reason why you couldn't minimize the amount of minutes that Cody Ceci is screwing games up for you. But Babcock almost seems to want this to fail. I don't know. It's a very weird situation. But the question I have, can Mike Babcock get more out of this team?
Well, it seems like there's some talent there that he could.
There's a lot of talent. There's a ton of talent.
That's what I'm saying. It definitely seems like he could and he should, but if he's reluctant to make change, and we just saw Gerard Gallant a few games ago make several moves just to try to shake things up and get guys, you know, thinking or trying some other combinations or do something. But if you just sit back and you keep on doing what you're doing that's not being successful, that's not a good indicator of things.
Mike Babcock has his favorites. He has his guys that he's loyal to, and then he's got the guys that he rides a little bit harder than everybody else. William Nylander, so far this year, in 22 games, 8 goals, 9 assists, 17 points, 22 games played. However, there was a game against the Philadelphia Flyers where William Nylander got skated around and just didn't really expect the play to come his way, and it ends up in a goal. And much the opposite of what we would see out of Gerard Gallant, William Nylander would have been out there the next shift to try to make up for it. Not with Mike Babcock, though.
He's got a doghouse.
If you make a mistake, you're benched. Doesn't matter like how good you are. Doesn't matter how much you can help the team win in terms of scoring goals. If you make a mistake, no. It's done. So, is it fair for Toronto media, is it fair for Toronto Maple Leaf fans to want Mike Babcock gone? My big question, is it Babcock or is it roster construction? Is it coaching or is it management? What is wrong with Toronto?
Well, right now it seems like there's an awful lot wrong with them. From the front office to the coaching to the players on the ice, Austin Matthews was talking about it. Austin Matthews recently told TSN's Schiltorn, it's tough to get worse from here. It's frustrating in the locker room.
They're without Mitch Marner for a while. It could get worse.
Confidence isn't exactly high right now. We have nobody to blame but ourselves. It's really up to us. When you come out and say that it's tough to get worse from here and that there's no confidence in the locker room, that seems to say volumes to me.
So, the Maple Leafs have been in Vegas for at least a day. Okay, so they've been here for a little while. Mike Babcock today was asked about his future as coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is what he had to say.
You know, not really. I'm in a pretty good spot in my life. You know, my kids are growing. If my kids were young, I'd never coach in Toronto. Okay? So in my spot, I don't spend a whole lot of time listening. But I do get text messages from people that, are, you know, are friends of yours. And they're sending you texts, well, they care about you. Well, I'm going to do it as hard as I can, as long as I can. And I've always bet on Mike Babcock. I'll continue to bet on him. Well, I mean, obviously, what we're doing isn't going good enough. And so I want to give everyone a reset there. And help or something. They're all going to play a little bit more with everyone on Ozone faceoffs and that. We're just going to try to find a way to maximize the group. We don't feel we're doing a good enough job that way, so we got to do a better job in that area. And as a group of forwards, we got to get to work and look after our D better. And so that kind of is the message here, is we got to clean this area of our game up for sure. We're not getting the transition we're used to getting over the last few years, and so we got to do a better job in the offensive zone, being organized, coming out, and so we can get some transition going the other way like we used to. So that's a priority for us and allow our skill to come out.
Can we give him some time between getting off the ice and having to answer questions?
They don't want to do it because they want to get you right when you're mode.
Jeez.
So you maybe don't think as much about what you're going to say.
Anyway, here are the interesting parts. If my kids weren't grown, or if my kids were younger, I would never coach in Toronto. So that's number one. That speaks volumes of just the amount of pressure that he's under every single day that he comes to the office. Number two, the bit about betting on Mike Babcock. Well, that's totally fair, and I get it. You want to know what has led to Mike Babcock's career success as a coach? J.S. Jaguar being amazing, amazing in the playoffs in 2003 for the Anaheim Ducks, where they go on that magical run, they beat the Red Wings, they get all the way to the Stanley Cup final, and lose in seven games to New Jersey. Because, you know, it was all what Mike Babcock was doing as a coach and not at all about J.S. Jaguar rewriting the record book for goaltenders.
Well, that's good coaching.
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. And then there's Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk and Nick Lidstrom in 2007 and 2008. Or I'm sorry, 2008 and 2009. So I wonder if we as a hockey society are maybe overrating how good of a coach Mike Babcock is. Because let's be honest, if you were to look at what the Toronto Maple Leafs have on paper, there's no way they should be close to 500. They're significantly better than that. So the only thing that I can say, and while you can say Dubas made a couple of mistakes, sure, that's fine. You take a swing and you miss on Barry, okay. You go out there, you try to get some cap relief with CeCe. Okay, that's fine. I get it. It happens. But there's still plenty of talent here. There's still plenty of talent to be coached into wins. And to me, they are not being coached into wins.
I want to throw two other things in here real quick on that same vein when you're talking about Toronto and their struggles of late. They've allowed the opening goal in seven straight games now, so they're constantly coming from behind.
Oh, they don't start on time at all.
They only have two regulation wins in their last 15 games. So even some of the games they've won, they're taking overtime or a shootout to do it. You mentioned the thing about him talking about, if my kids weren't grown, I would never be in Toronto. Matt Sundin had an interesting thing about that, former Toronto Maple Leafs captain. He said recently, he told the Canadian press, it's a lot of pressure to play here. It's extra attention for management, for players. You're going to have ups and downs over a season, and sometimes the patience is a lot better in a market like Tampa or if you play for the Florida Panthers rather than the Maple Leafs or the Montreal Canadiens. Is he saying that basically some guys can hack it in Toronto and some guys can't? Because if you don't like the media, they're not going to give you a break.
There are coaches that get you from not so good to pretty good. And then there are coaches that get you from pretty good to elite. We've seen it. We've seen it over the course of the last couple of seasons in which there have been coaching changes mid-season that have led to Stanley Cups for certain teams. Daryl Sutter did it with L.A.
We saw it last year with St. Louis.
Yeah, Mike Sullivan did it with the Penguins. We saw it last year, Craig Berube with St. Louis. So there are certain teams that need a change to get there. If I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think that they're a candidate. I don't know how much longer Mike Babcock has. I do know that if he doesn't have much longer in Toronto, he's not going to be out of work for long.
No, that would be shocking if he is, unless he wanted to be, which I don't know why he'd want to be, but then you never know. We need to give away another pair of tickets for that game against Toronto tomorrow.
Toronto, you say, huh?
Toronto, I say.
Okay. Another Toronto Maple Leaf legend. A great, great Maple Leaf. Number 93, Dougie Gilmore.
Doug Gilmore, 93, 702-876-1340, 702-876-1340, 93. You've got tickets to the game against Toronto tomorrow. Back to wrap it up next. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Welcome back. Wrapping it up. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Congratulations to Michael. He's going to be checking out Toronto tomorrow over at T-Mobile Arena. Once again, that game will be at 7 p.m. Ryan and I will be on at 6:30 with the pregame. Coming up to Hyde Lounge. Say hi. And if you won the tickets, you know, that'd
give
be
a
cool
hug
as well.
Free hugs.
Yeah.
Frank Harnish.
Ryan's giving out free hugs.
Free hugs. Frank Harnish.
Have you guys heard of Sawyer and Simon Seidel?
Nope.
Well, Sawyer and Simon Seidel are two young kids from the Congo. They were adopted years ago when their parents came there and they brought them to Minnesota. They are hoping to become the first African players in the NHL down the road, as they have picked up hockey. Their mother Molly said when they first got there, it was literally a 100-degree difference. Winter would come in Minnesota, and she would have to remind them to put their jackets and shoes on because they would run outside in the snow, and then they'd be freezing. But now they love hockey. They've absolutely fallen in love with the sport. They did a piece on them on the Today Show. It pretty much went viral, and people were all over it. PK Subban said, hey, look forward. I hope I'm still in the league to play against you guys when you make it to the big show. Their coaches have said that they've won several MVP awards in Canada, in the United States, and in a tournament in Russia. The older brother won some MVP awards. So we say hockey's for everyone. A couple kids from the Congo looking like they're almost a shoo-in for D1 schools in hockey and maybe the NHL someday.
It's an awesome story.
Pretty good story. That's going to do it for us. JT the Brick's up next. We'll talk to you again tomorrow with more tickets for the Toronto game. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio.